The following tape was made of Sydney R. from California as she spoke at the 1984 Philadelphia Regional Convention.
Miss Sydney, and I'm an addict. Can you hear me back there? I personally want to thank the Greater Philadelphia Convention Committee for asking me to be here this evening in Philadelphia. It's really a privilege. I want to tell you that I came in Wednesday, and as busy as they were, and it was insane, they have made me feel so welcome and so loved. I cannot tell you how much you're going to mean to me for the rest of my life, because the gift of Narcotics Anonymous, these years that I have been around, has been all of you people. I know so many people out here from the past years. We have done so much together and have shared so much together. And I want to just tell you all right now that I love you all very, very much.
Love you too. Yeah.
I've got to tell you the first thing my old man said when he knew I was coming out here. And this is only my old man's opinion of me or feelings about me. He said, I told him, I said, Bobby called and asked me if I'd be the speaker in Philadelphia. And he said, oh my God, the gold of my ear of Narcotics Anonymous is going to the Liberty Bell. Wait till I tell him the Liberty Bell has a crack in it. In the middle of, I believe it was August, of 1975, my eldest daughter, Robin, brought me to a hospital in Los Angeles. When she brought me in, she never thought that I would come out alive. You know, they say that if you talk about hell, if an addict talks about hell and looks into another addict's eye, that only another addict would understand what that hell is. You know, it's less than 100 pounds. I had used drugs for 25 years. I never had a day free of drugs. The drug of my choice were pills, scripts. I used other drugs, but that was the drug of my choice. I got chills when I said that, because all of a sudden what happened was that I remembered for a moment my daughter bringing me into that hospital, and I don't remember how I got there. And what I do remember was a moment when I woke up in the hospital room, apparently, and the hospital was all white, you know, and the first thing I saw was all this white, and I said, my God, I've made it to heaven. And then I looked into my daughter's eyes, and I said, oh my God, what have I done? You know, when I used those drugs, and I started out with a few, by the time I hit my bottom 25 years later, the last 5 years of my using, I was taking over 150 pills a day. Uppers, downers. I get 5 scripts from one doctor, and 3 of them were triple scripts. I shouldn't be alive today. And when I came into this program, I didn't want to be alive. And even what was more frightening was that I was legally insane. I know I don't have to tell you people what paranoia is. I do want to tell you one of the things that happened about my paranoia. I had saved over thousands and thousands of small little bottles that my pills came in. Right? What if the garbage man picks up the garbage and finds out how much I'm using? And 2 days before I was supposed to get into the hospital, because I knew then at that time that that was it, I was going to have to do something or die, I called up a friend, and she came over, and I filled the huge garbage bags filled with empty pills. Then I put the garbage bag filled with the empty bottles into a suitcase, snuck that into her car, had her drive me to a market where they had those huge bins, garbage bins, went over there and took out half the garbage, in case anyone was watching me, threw my bag of empty bottles in there, and then the garbage over it. And you talk about pitiful. And that was just one of many, many incidents. I mean, 24 hours a day, I was paranoid. When the gardener came over and he was cutting off the hedge, I was sure he was cutting it to make it shorter so that he could look into the window. Now, I couldn't talk in a room without bringing someone into the bathroom and turning the tub on, the faucet on. I was going to say that I was less than a vegetable, but that isn't true because a vegetable had more life than I did. I lost everything except the love of my daughters. I had three daughters. And I remember watching them, the frustration in their eyes and in themselves, when, "Mother, can't you do anything?" And all I could think of, "Oh God, if they would only leave me alone, if they would only give me enough, I'd be all right." You have enough. I had to have more than one doctor. At around 6 or 7. And when I couldn't get enough, even then, you could go across the border in Los Angeles and get anything you want there. And I remember waiting till the last moment where I had just enough to get me there and get me back. And I went to any lengths to get my drugs. I had no hope. I felt a desperateness that today I still find hard to describe. And when she took me into the hospital, and I was told that for the rest of my life I was going to have to do without drugs, I don't know which frightened me more. Today when I think back and I think, which was worse, the bottom that I hit or kicking? When you stop using those pills after 25 years of use, I sat in those chairs and I shook for 2.5 years in my clean time. When I walked into this program, you only had 1.5 meetings at that time in Los Angeles. You call it a half, no one went to the other half. When I went into that first meeting, people there didn't wonder whether I was going to make the program. They wondered whether I would live. I want to just go back a little and give you just a little background. It's very difficult to give any more because it's very difficult to go through 50 years, and that's how old I was when I came into Narcotics Anonymous. And today I'm 59. I just had a birthday last month. And all I can tell you, I hope you broads out there can feel as good as my age. In fact, before I tell you a little about the past, I want to tell you, I don't believe in talking about relationships. They have nothing to do with recovery. The only reason I'm going to say something is to bring my old man into it, and also to be able to say that so many people use that as an excuse for going out. Got news for you. That's all that it is an excuse, a justification for going out and using. When I had 8 days in the hospital and a little band around my wrist, someone called me up and they said, "Hey, I heard about this meeting. I think it's called Narcotics Anonymous. They have one out in Redondo Beach." Now, you have to understand, I'm lying on the hospital bed, stretched out, shaking. I couldn't talk. I couldn't walk. I couldn't eat. I couldn't lift food to my mouth. And he's telling me to go to a meeting, and something I had never heard about before. As it was, I called him up 7 times that afternoon. First I said yes, then I said no, then I said yes, and then I said no. And finally something in me said, Sidney, go for broke. And I called him up and I said, pick me up. And I walked into this room. It was funny because at Los Angeles Regional Convention, I was speaking to Bobby's sponsor and to my sponsor, who are our dearest friends, and I was telling them exactly who was at that meeting that evening, what everyone said. You know, my brain was so fried, I couldn't even read a sentence, but I will never forget the feeling in that room. I walked into that room and I didn't have to substitute one word for another. I sat in that room and I heard people talking about using drugs. And I heard that there was recovery there. And I said, my God, there's someone out there who understands. And even though we didn't have very much of Narcotics Anonymous for the past 6 years, I myself have not had to go to any other meetings but Narcotic Anonymous meetings. And I want you to know that I remember sitting at those meetings when I had 2.5 and 3 years and thinking, oh my God, it's alone up here. I sat in that room with a lot more time, or the most time, than most of the people in there. And I heard people saying, oh, I've got to have people around me, you know, with more experience. And I said, what happens if I leave then, supposing everyone else did that? Right. And for the new people in this room, I want you to know that there is recovery in Narcotics Anonymous. And my first love, and the passion that I have for this program, I cannot tell you. And how could you not have a love for a program that has given you back the gift of life? I was born in New York City. I love those accents. I lived 40 years in California and I can't get rid of my New York accent. And when someone says you've got a New York accent, you should see it get heavier and heavier and heavier. Love it. My parents were the Russian immigrants that came over with all the immigrants in the early 1900s. They suffered a great deal. In Russia at that time, they had a great many pogroms. And my parents and my two older sisters that were born there did go through a great deal of pain and suffering. And they were about to take my father into the army, and they were taking the Jews at that time and sending them up to Siberia, and he escaped. And through the underground, he came to the United States. And 8 years later, he sent for my mother and my two sisters. You know that I came much later. My two older sisters are 17 and 19 years older than myself. And I grew up, and today I know it, with two very, very beautiful human beings, my mom and my dad. My father, by the way, was 91 when he died. My mother was 87. So they lived long enough for me to learn how to forgive something that I did not understand and blame them so much all of my life. This program gives you the gift of not having to point your fingers to anyone. You know, my parents, my mother was very, very critical, very judgmental, and because of that I grew up with so many feelings, terrible feelings of inadequacy. I felt unloved as a child, and as a child I thought like a child, understood as a child, and I did not know that my parents showed love in a different way, and it didn't mean that they didn't love me. I grew up in a very religious home. My father, part-time, they had very, very small temples in New York City, in the West Bronx at that time. And my father was a part-time chazan, that's a cantor, a man who sings the prayers through the Torah, through the laws of God. And I rebelled against that religion. I felt it was being forced down my throat. I was brought up with a punishing God, you know. All I heard was, God is going to get you. Why can't you play violin the way your cousin Helen plays the violin? Thank God. You know, in those days, if someone had a disease like ours, although you never heard of it, of course, Jews don't get drunk, take dope, they had to put them in the closet. My similar. Never. But with these feelings of inadequacy that I grew up with, and I'm talking about severe inadequacy, I'm talking about so afraid to speak up, so afraid of this person that could never do anything right, so afraid of this person that this God that I knew about was going to punish me. And so what I did was I overcompensated, and I built up an image of myself, a facade, you know. And I wouldn't let anyone see those feelings of inadequacy. I wouldn't let anyone know about the feelings of guilt and of shame. Man, I don't know about you, but shame was my second name, you know. When my mother and my father died, they died exactly the same month, a year apart. I was not on the program. They died 5 years before I came into the program. And after that time, man, I went downhill. It wasn't because of them. It was because of the drugs. It was just at that time that everything, every burden, every problem that happened was just so overblown in my heart, in my head, in my mind. The drugs were beginning to do its job well. I want to talk to you about something that happened not too long ago. Because what happened then is so much a part of what recovery in Narcotics Anonymous is all about for me. It's not easy, and it's very painful. 17 months ago, my beautiful 29-year-old daughter died. Her name was Leslie. And I remember I would go around and I would say to my babies, you call them pigeons, whatever. I would say to them, God will never put in front of you more than what you could handle. No matter what you go through, here in recovery, Narcotics Anonymous will never be as terrible as what you went through there. When I had 7 years, and this all happened in one day, my daughter woke up in the morning. I rushed her over to the emergency hospital. She was there for 5 hours and they gave her every conceivable test. And they couldn't find anything wrong and they sent her home. And a few hours later, without any idea of what was happening, she died in my arms. I thought that I had experienced every kind of pain that a human being could experience. But I tell you, in my life, I have never experienced anything that was so painful, so agonizing. I loved her so very much. You know, when something like that happens, you don't have time to think about whether you have a loving God or you don't have a loving God, or think of anything. From the moment that it happened, there was only, and I know it'd be heavy to say that this didn't happen, but I have to be honest and tell you how it did happen. There was not one moment that I did not hold on to the faith that I felt, because I could not get through 1 minute. I did not think I was going to live through 1 moment of the anguish, the loss that I was feeling. Many of you know her. Many of you that have been to our home, L.A., and I know how much you all loved her. And I tell you, from this beautiful girl, one could learn courage and what love was about. And in her eulogy, I said she truly was a child of God. I thought I was going to go crazy. And every moment, my sponsor came over and stayed at the house for 5 days with me, a week. And every moment, I said, oh my God, help me. Help me to get through this next moment. And God did. When I tell you that I know that there is a loving God, I can only tell you that I felt His presence in our home, in that room that I never moved from. I could actually feel God crying in that room. And there were many questions that had not answered or had not been answered for me in my lifetime. I don't think I have to tell you what were the two questions that were asked so much of me. And one was, do you want to use? And the other is, do you still believe in a loving God? That wanting to use, I became enraged. Is this all that the love for my daughter would mean to me, is to want to use and destroy myself again? Man, I spent my life out there being a victim. I came into this program not to be a victim again. And about God, I had absolutely no doubt as to this loving God, but I had a great deal of searching to do. You see, at that time, if I would have said that I did not believe I had a loving God, my love for her and the pain, the anguish was so great. My love for this program was so great. That how do I justify this loving God that we have in our program of Narcotics Anonymous? And what I began to understand were a number of things. I had long thought that most of the things that went wrong in my life were of my own doing. But then there came other things. How come an airplane goes up in the air filled with people and just those particular people die or crash, die? You know. How come some innocent children are killed by a man or a woman or whoever? Why this innocent child? Certainly this loving God that I believe in does not test me. I can't believe that a loving God would say, Sydney, you have to learn more faith, or you have to learn to depend on your God, or whatever lesson you're supposed to learn. I don't believe a loving God would take away my daughter to prove something to me. And what I began to understand is that the very things that give us life on this planet, gravity that allows us to stand here, sit here, when a plane goes up and some unknown wind factor comes along and that plane crashes, the gravity will cause the death of people on that plane. But it allows all of us to live here on this planet. You talk about the killer that goes out and kills this innocent child. God gave human beings free choice. And it's that person, it is not God, that goes out and will do that deed. And I began to understand nature's law, life's laws. And they had nothing to do with what God wanted for us. But I do know one thing, that we have a loving God, and that no matter what happens in our lives, this loving God will help you go through it where you never have to use again, no matter what it is. I guess every mother's parents' dread is the thought of losing her child. And I didn't know what the future was going to hold. A few months after Leslie died, my sponsor and I were driving in the car. And she said to me, "Sydney, you know, we were so concerned. We thought you were going to lose your mind." And I looked at her and I said, "God would have helped me through that also. Because that is all that I knew I had. If I was to let that go, I would have nothing." And let me tell you, left to my own devices, without the program of Narcotics Anonymous, I would be out there so fucked up, or better still, I would have taken a gun to my head and ended it sooner. Nothing can convince me or make me feel otherwise. My eldest daughter said to me, she says, "Mother, where's the justice?" She loved her so much. She said, "Mother, where is the justice?" She said, "Life isn't fair." I said, "You're damn right it isn't fair. That's the way it is." And then later on I thought, "Sydney, I ask all of you this. Do you really want justice? Would you be willing to pay the price for what you have done to hurt another human being in your life?" I began to understand after 7 years the first step of Narcotics Anonymous, and the reason why I was so afraid of that step, because I knew I had no control, no power over my life or anything that happens in life. And until you experience anything like it, you begin to understand the depths of these steps, and it's not something that you just read that sounds so simple to repeat, or you memorize it and say, "I've done it, I've got it." That's not what the steps and the conditions are about. Now, when it comes to the second step, I've got to tell you something. I think the first step that most of us forget as we get into recovery, into clean time, is the second step. I take it so much for granted that God will restore me to sanity. I have found it ever so important to find out what the insanity is I'm supposed to be restored from. You hear someone say, "I had enough meetings this week." That's insanity. Hear someone say, "I'm going to go down and visit the old neighborhood." That's insanity. It is so important. I could go on and on with the insanities. It is so important to be able to recognize what the insanity is. surrender my life to a loving God, I took it back just as fast at the beginning. Yeah. And self-deception had me believe that I had completely surrendered it. And that was that. I was through with that step. Now, self-deception means that we lie to ourselves. And I really had to learn. I had to learn everything. It was not easy. There always has to be a beginning to learning. I wanted the answer the day before. I wanted a written guarantee, and I wanted God to sign it in blood. And I had to learn patience. Yeah. I want. Great takers. I swore I would never do my fourth step. How dare these punks tell me? I've got that buried so nicely all those 50 years, and yet telling me to stir this up? They're out of their minds. Those punks taught me a hell of a lot. And let me tell you the value of that fourth step that we're all so frightened of. Yeah. It was there, in doing of the fourth step, that I was able to see my character defects. I was able to see the people that I had harmed. I was able to see where patterns, destructive patterns, had started. The patterns that kept going and going and became such a great part of my life that that's all I knew how to do was to destroy. And my fifth step, I was just going to do by my God. Of course I didn't. I'll tell you one thing that I wanted. You know, when we come into this program and we're hurting, there's a spark. In every single one of us, there's a little spark that says, I want to live. And it was that spark. As much as I kicked and I screamed, I went to any lengths, my God, so that I could be clean. Another two steps that so many of us seem to forget, or we go over so quickly to six and seven steps. I want you to know that until the day I die, I will have to work the sixth and seventh steps. One day at a time. You know, I used to think that if I became aware of something, I had it. Let me tell you something about awareness. Awarenesses are like assholes. Everyone has one. Now what are you going to do about it? Because every single step means you take an action. You know, they talk about just a few steps having action or action steps. Every step that we have means you take action. God will do 99% of it for you, but you've got to do that 1% and you've got to do it to the max. You've got to earn clean time. You've got to earn the gifts that this program can give you. You know, I've shared a great deal of pain and I've shared a great deal of sorrow with you here this evening. But I want to tell you something else. Not only before Leslie died, but now, soon afterwards. There is so much joy. I don't believe that God put us here to suffer. That is only part of living, you know. There are so many gifts, and you think about the love that we have here in this program, the care, the concern. I can accept you. You can accept me with all of our character defects. Where else in the world can you have that? We learn to be forgiving. Not wait for forgiveness first. We learn to be understanding, and it is more important than to be understood. Now, I spoke in another state a few days before I came here, and there was a little girl there, a young woman. who had 5 days, and she started to speak. And she said, "Oh my God," she says, "I'm hurting. It's too hard. I can't do it. It's too hard. It's too painful." And I spoke to her after the meeting, and I said, "You're damn right it's hard. You can't expect to be out there all your life killing yourself and then walk in and there's a magic wand that takes it all away, man. You've got to earn it."
Yeah.
You know. And I took her hand and I said, "Let us love you until you can start loving yourself." Eighth and ninth step, of course, that one, another one I was never going to do. I had a very hard time with that because I always tried doing that step, coming out looking good. Man, I'd sit there and I would shake and I would think, "Now, how can I justify this one?" But of course, I want to say I'm sorry, but do you remember what you did to me? And then all of a sudden, right, a spark, a light came along, said, "Sydney, you're supposed to be sincere. You know, you're supposed to not want to hurt another person again or do this thing again." You know, it was so easy for me to say I'm sorry. It was a different thing for me never to do that again, hurt that person again in the same way. My 10th, 11th, 12th steps, my maintenance steps. Well, I don't know about you, but I came into this program. I used to call it, procrastination. I used to love it. Procrastination. I went into a 10-year depression when I found out that was sloth. Evening would come along and I did not want to do, "Oh well, I have too much to do, I gotta help this chick, you know, or that, you know, God, I'm sorry," and all that. You know, let me tell you something, I wrote a 10th step for 3 years to discipline myself in doing that 10th step. I don't say everyone, I'm just talking about what I had to do. I was very sick when I came in. The 11th step, that was another procrastination. As Barbara was saying last night, you could lie down in bed and do it. God understands. Man, I tell you, I get down on my hands and knees. And one thing my daughter's death told me was how precious this life is. And that maybe this is what it's all about, to learn how to live and not have to die the way we died and killed ourselves out there. God, I hurt. You know, I am so grateful for this loving God that has allowed me to be able to live and to know what it means and to know what love means. I love them to death and I don't own them. They're their own free souls. But I do enjoy every moment with them. When I'm with you people, and I have never met an addict that I couldn't love, I do love you. It's a gift. I had no feelings when I came into this program. They were dead. And it's a gift of loving and being able to receive love, to appreciate, to be grateful. Everything that our program tells us about is right here in the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous. can get into the 12 step. A few years ago, I met someone that I had known quite some time in the program who had a great deal more time than myself. And he said, "Sidney, you're always so busy in this program, always doing. Don't you ever do anything for yourself?" And I looked at this man and I said, "Oh my God." I found out by then that I didn't have to defend anything or explain anything. You know, when Leslie died, there were hundreds of people that came into our home, night and day. I was never alone. Hardly anyone said anything. They just sat there, they held my hand, they were bringing food. I don't even know how anything got done. All that I know was that I was caught in this pain. And they were there every moment of the time. I should have known that they were praying for Bobby and I and my daughters, my other daughters, at the meetings. At the funeral there were, I don't know, maybe around 200 people, all of them from Narcotics Anonymous. There were a few family and her friends that loved her very much. By the way, her friends still call me up. I can't tell you. Sometimes I get ashamed of the feeling. And then I have to understand that I'm human. You know, I'm only on the road to perfection. They call up and I'm like jarred. And I think, oh my God, my Leslie isn't here. And people say, "My God, what you do, Sidney, in this program." I said, "Forget that. We do things not to pat ourselves on the shoulder. We do it because we're supposed to be doing it. Because we must give back what was given to us and give it with love." Tell you that all the years that I had been in service, a hundredfold was given back to me. Unconditional love. It was there and you could feel it and you could touch it. You know, I could go on and on and on and talk about this program of Narcotics Anonymous that I love so much. Before I close, there are a few things I want to say. I want to say especially to the new people here this evening. You don't ever have to go out and use again. I know. There are many of you that may not make it, no matter how much time, including myself. We don't know what the future brings. You've heard us say over and over again that we have no answers, but there is an answer. And the answer is in the 12 steps and the 12 traditions of Narcotics Anonymous and the principles of this program. I want to tell you a story, a short one. Some of you have heard it, I know Roger's heard it. But it happened very close to here. It happened when I was a very young girl. I was around 16 or 17 years old. My mother took me out to Lakehurst, New Jersey, right? For the Christmas vacation. It was snowing and the lake was frozen over. And I got up this one day, and I was dressed warm, and I went down to the lake, and they were skating. And the sun started to come out, and I said, "I'm going to take a nice walk." New York, you walk. L.A., you don't. And I was walking, and I was walking, and I was walking, and all of a sudden, I felt something. I looked around, and everything looked strange and different. And the snow weren't top of the bare branches of this tree, and underneath it, underneath the branches, underneath the snow, you could see this burnt, charred wood. And as far as I could look, I could see this. And then something smelled funny. Burnt wood, whatever it was. And then something even stranger happened. There was a silence there. You couldn't hear anything or anyone. Further back, when I was walking, you could hear something running through the woods. But in this area, there was nothing. Man, the sun was starting to set. And I said, oh my God, I've got to get out of here. And I started to run, and I ran back to the village. And the first place I came to was a mom and pop's place. You know, serving, that age I was drinking hot chocolate. And I was freezing cold and frightened, and I didn't know what I was frightened of. And this mom said, where are you from? And I told her, New York. And we started talking. She says, what were you doing today? And I told her about the strange rock. I said, and I got to this place, and it was weird, and all these branches, and the burnt branches underneath. She says, oh, yes. She says, we've had a terrible, terrible fire. It burnt this whole part of the lake. She says, it was terrible. People came from miles and miles around, and they would look at this fire burning, and all the animals in the forest were killed. You could hear the screeching. You could hear the sounds coming out of the forest. And she said, only the birds escape. When I had a few years in the program, I was thinking of that particular story. And I said, my God, that reminds me of us. Aren't we like those birds that escaped that wreckage in that room, only to find a home here in Narcotics Anonymous?
We hope you enjoy this tape of Sidney R. Talks from other NE members can be obtained from the World Service Office at the address on the tape.